very much. Thank you very much.
Best.
Thank you.
Best.
Okay. You want your back? Does he want his back? Okay, good morning. Can you hear me pretty well? How about now? No, not yet, huh? Does somebody turn on the volume or something? It took an hour to get a blackboard, so you expect sound right away too, you know? Anyway, don't get me started. Okay, we're talking about this book. I want to talk about this book. It's called Shame, Attachment Loss, and the practical work of reparative therapy. The phrase "the practical work" was a term that Freud used to describe the actual work that the therapist does with the client. So basically, this book was written for therapists who want to work with men and women, especially men, who want to overcome their same-sex attractions. It's also for a book, this book would be appropriate for the person who is struggling with the issue himself, but it's a little more sophisticated with the psychological concepts. Over the years, we have learned, I've been doing this work for almost 30 years. Our clinic is in Los Angeles, Encino, California. We have about 135 ongoing cases. 98% of our clients are men who are dealing with unwanted homosexuality. We have 5 therapists. One is a woman who works with the lesbians, and the other 4, plus myself, are dealing with men. And over the years of our work and the consultation and our group supervision, the focus has become more and more on the phenomenon of shame. So much so that we've gotten to the position that when the client walks in, we say, "Don't worry about your homosexuality. Your homosexuality will take care of itself. All you have to do is focus on shame moments." And that's the entire focus is the shame moment. I'll say to a client who comes in for the first session, now this might be a man who's struggling with homosexuality for 20 or 30 years. I'll say to him, "Have you ever noticed that there might be 1 or 2 or 3 days or 4 days where homosexuality never occurs to you? It doesn't seem to be a problem. You just don't think about it. And then there are other times, maybe another day or 2 or 3 days in a row, where it seems to be a major preoccupation." And they'll all be able to relate to that. But then I ask them the question, "Why do you think this is so?" And they always have the same answer: "I don't know." And that's exactly the pivotal point between that state of no homosexual attractions versus the preoccupation with it. And we're talking about 2 self states, and we'll be talking about self states. And the self state is a mindset. It's a self-awareness. It's a consciousness. And we're talking about 2 self states. A is assertion, and the other one is homosexual enactment. And anybody who's dealing with this issue, maybe you can relate to this, because I don't want this to be a theoretical presentation. I want to try to tie it in to your actual experiences. The assertive state is when you are feeling clear, confident, you're expressing yourself, you're not anticipating anything negative coming along, you're being expressive and creative, you're feeling integrated, you're feeling calm and centered, you're feeling your feelings, you're relating to others in an open way. What you're feeling and how you're expressing it is unified. You're connected to people and you're connected to yourself. That is the assertive state. When you're in this assertive state, there is no homosexuality. It could be a passing thought, but it's something you could easily dismiss. The homosexual enactment state is everything the opposite. It's driven, it's focused, your awareness is very closed in, it's obsessive, it's driven. You're not really feeling your feelings. You're driven by your compulsion, but there's no wide range of emotionality. So these are the 2 self states. In between, I'm going to have to use, I'll do it this way. That's basically it. Everyone who's in at our clinic who is overcoming their homosexuality has this memorized. A-S-G-Z-H-E. And this is basically how it goes. The person's in their assertion. They're feeling good. They're connected. Things are going well. They're feeling optimistic about their life. Somebody does something or says something that creates a shame moment. And you feel it in your body. It's a collapse. And that's why the body is a central part of reparative therapy, the body work that we talk about. Because the client doesn't understand this intellectually. He understands this in his body. And when he has a shame moment, there's an actually embodied collapse. The shoulders drop, head slumps, energy drops. And he goes into something called the gray zone. The gray zone is a mood state. It's different from the others in the sense that these are self states. But in the gray zone, there is no self. The self is obliterated. So you can't say it's a self state. It's more of a mood state. And the gray zone is characterized by this kind of pervasive, dead, blah, disconnected, lonely, isolated, bored, frustrated, but not knowing how to direct that frustration. I was talking to a man last night, and I said to him, what are the feelings that you're feeling before you decide to act out? And he said, bored and frustrated. And there are many more in here. And that is because of the shame moment. This is all unconscious. What Freud called the unconscious, we now call the body. The body is the mechanism that is going on, that is operating within the person outside the awareness of the individual. And the treatment, the focus of the therapy is to make bodily processes, what Freud called the unconscious, now conscious. Let me give you a definition of boredom. Boredom is when I do not give myself permission to express myself. Boredom is when I do not give myself permission to express myself. Another way of saying that is when I am expressing myself, I'm never bored. Frustration is a conflict between anger and fear of expressing that anger or fear of feeling that anger. And these are characteristics of the gray zone, which is preceded by the shame moment, which knocks the person out of the assertion and sets the person up for homosexual enactment. So when we say to the client, so if a client comes in and says, last Saturday night I acted out. Acting out, we just use that as a phrase. Acting out can mean masturbation with homosexual fantasy. It can mean actual sexual contact with another person. It can mean gay porn. Whatever that happens to be for the individual, we call it acting out. Homosexual enactment. So when the client comes in and reports his homosexual enactment, I don't ask him what he did. The only question we ask him is, how were you feeling the moment before you decided to act out? And they always say the same thing. I don't know. I don't remember. They never remember how they were feeling just before they decided to act out. Because there was no self there to remember. You need an awareness of the self. The memory is in the body. Our memory is in our body. It's not in our head. If I say to you, in your shower at home, and if you're taking a shower and you want to turn the faucet for hot water, do you turn it left or right? I don't care the answer. It doesn't matter. This is not a group therapy session, okay? I appreciate the readiness to disclose, you know? The point is, you might have noticed you had to do with your hand for a moment. You had to kind of go, oh, yeah. Does anybody drive a stick shift? Right? Where is reverse? You have to kind of go like that, right? Memory is in the body. So the person never remembers the homosexual enactment because there is no body there. He's shut down. He's dead. He's dead to himself. But when we get them to analyze this, they will talk about blah, lonely, dead, defeated, isolated, negative, discouraged, cynical, bored, frustrated. And then we get them to move back to here. And we say, how long have you been in that state? And they have no memory of it. Let's say the guy acted out. This is what we call detective work, because we're teaching the client to identify the stuff while it's happening. The name of the game is to keep the person here. If we keep the person here, there is no homosexuality. And the only way that he can get to here is with this, shame. And if we teach the client to identify the shame moment and bounce back to the assertion, he never has to worry about this. All his healing will happen here. Because one of the major advances in reparative therapy is recognizing the importance of male bonding, non-sexual male bonding. That's a fundamental. And that can only happen here. Because when you're open and receptive and non-defensive, that's when you make your connections with other men. But if you're in the shame posture and anticipating shame, you're not going to make that connection. And you're certainly not going to make it here or here. The fantasy is that you're going to make it here. This is a fantasy of this. This is a short circuit. This is a narcissistic fantasy. I will make the male connection here. I will fulfill my emotional needs here. I will deal with this problem with this. And of course, it never works. That's why the client comes into therapy, because he tried it, but it doesn't work. So the assertion is where all the healing happens, because healing can only happen through relationships. The creation of the homosexual condition came about because of traumatic childhood experiences. So, traumatic relationships created homosexuality, and the healing of homosexuality is also through relationships. And relationships can only happen here, because that's when you're fully alive to yourself and to other people. That beautiful quote from Saint Irenaeus, "The glory of God is man fully alive." That's where God intends us to be, fully alive. And when we're here, there's no place, there's no room, there's no openings for homosexuality. So I want to talk about the shame moment. Oh, I was talking about doing the detective work. Let me go back to that. So the detective work. So the person says, okay, when did you act out? I acted out 8 o'clock on Saturday night. How were you feeling before? Well, I was in a gray zone. How long were you in the gray zone? And they go, well, come to think of it, all day Saturday, I was in this blah state. How were you when you woke up on Saturday morning? Yeah, I was still feeling down. How were you Friday night? Friday night. I think I was also pretty miserable. How were you Friday morning? Friday morning, I was pretty good. And they could pretty much catch it. Friday morning, I got up. I went to work. Everything was great. I was feeling pretty good. Now, I know that this happened, but he doesn't know that yet. Okay, so you woke up Friday morning, and you were feeling pretty good. And then Friday night, you were here. What happened? And they can never remember it. And we have this on video, because the training, we do training of therapists using video, split screen, where there's a camera on the therapist and a camera on the client. And we have them merged so you can see the attunement and the interaction. And we actually have many examples of this, where the client finally identifies the shame moment. And he'll say, well, let's see. Friday morning I was feeling pretty good. I was going to go have lunch with my friend, and I was looking forward to it. In fact, I was going to tell him about some personal issues, you know, a straight friend, and I'm going to tell him a little bit about what I'm dealing with. And all I remember is that when I left that lunch, I was walking back to my car, and I had the idea of acting out. So we know that the shame moment happened around lunch. And this is truly detective work, because he has no memory of it. So we have to do it kind of chronologically. And then you see the light go off. If you have it on video, you see their eyes open up. And they go, ah. And you just know it before they even say it, because there's a felt shift to here. They shift to here, and they go, ah. I was talking to my friend, and I was about to say something very important about that I wanted to disclose, and his phone went off, and he picked it up, and he started talking, and I felt that drop. I felt that I was not important to him. That is a shame moment. And it happens so quickly. And he censors his own shame moments. The client actually suppresses the experience of his own shame moment because in childhood he was taught not to feel the shame. Because if you feel shame and if you feel sadness or anger, and this goes back to parental, and I know there are some parents here, and this is not about attacking parents, but these are the interactions that happened. That certain shame moments happened in the relationship with the mother and father, primarily with the mother to begin with. And if the boy expressed that disappointment, he was punished for it. Because the mother, sorry mothers, what are you going to do? Learn, what can I tell you? The mother could not tolerate the boy's sadness. She could not tolerate it because she had a vested interest in her, in him being happy for her. So this is called a double bind, and we'll be talking about the double bind. The double bind is what gets a person from here to here. And the double bind is a no-win situation. Somebody does something to you, but if you comment on it, that person's going to make you feel worse for what you just did. So it's a no-win situation. So he could not say to his friend, Tony, which is a nice heterosexual name. Right? I mean, only a Tony would pick up a cell phone while, right? Am I right? Anyway, so he couldn't say to Tony, Tony, right now I'm feeling bad about the fact that you, he's going to sound like a wimp, right? Like, what's your problem? You know, get over it. I'm just talking to somebody. I'll be over, you know, so it's a double bind situation. So he cannot double loop with the person. I'll be talking in a moment about double bind, double loop. He cannot express to Tony how he feels right now. Because if he did, Tony would make him feel worse. So he internalizes it. He has no place else to go but to drop and to feel defeated. I can't win. I'll never be. And this is a common complaint of the man with a homosexual problem. People don't listen to me. People don't take me seriously. I have to be for others. I'm always meeting other people's expectations. If I'm never free enough to be myself, which is all this, which is what he wants to be. If you ask a homosexual man, what are you attracted to in straight men? They will tell you this. He's open, he's free, he's expressive, he's confident. He does what he wants, he doesn't care what people think. How would you like to be different? I wish I could be open, I wish I could be free, I didn't care what people thought. This is the idealized self. That's what homosexuality is. It's an eroticized envy. It's a projection, it's a narcissistic projection of your idealized self. And the homosexual fantasy is if I can connect with that person, I will infuse some of those qualities of masculinity that I do not possess within myself. That's reparative therapy number one. That's the foundation of reparative therapy. Notice these lines go in one direction. They do not go back and forth. It's real simple. You cannot go anyplace else but in that direction. To complicate the diagram a little more, we have this. Grief. This is grief work. This is the final phase of reparative therapy. Part three of the book deals with the grief phase of the healing process. Nobody's taking notes. I'm wasting my time here. Oh, there's one guy. All right. What's this? The father's walking out. He's already this. Can't tolerate it. No. All right. Nobody's, so you are taking notes. Okay. So this is it. This is the passage. I made it simple in the other diagram, an arrow going from here to here, but technically it goes this way. All right. Okay. This is called double bind, and this is called double loop. All right, double loop. So the process from assertion to shame is a double bind situation. The way from assertion back to, I'm sorry, from shame back to assertion is by double loop. Let me explain what I mean by that. The double bind is better known as a no-win situation. It requires the following. And this is how you shame a person. This is how you shame a child.